This is a production of Cornell University.
I call this meeting to order at 4:35. First thing on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from the last meeting. People want to are there any changes to the minutes?
Madam Chair, I think I do, but I'm not quite sure how I corrected yet. In Section 4A, sentence halfway through, it says, however, the CJC still had to address issues of contradiction within the council.
Is that the judicial code?
No, I think what they mean is that the university council's office pointed out a number of areas where our code might not be compliant with OCR's interpretation of Title IX. And I think that's what that sentence means. However, even though this hasn't passed, there are still...
There's still open issues that we need to address. Correct.
True story.
So this would be council F-E-L, not C-I-L. Have to get on New Yorker.
Well, yeah, that's true. How about SEL?
Yeah.
That gets to the more of the heart of it.
Are there any other changes to the minutes?
Evan, did you? Of additional?
Oh, there were other things I would change in that section. That's really the biggest one. I won't belabor that. I won't send you another track changes document. Even though I have one, I won't send it to you. I promise.
So no other changes?
Nothing.
Okay.
Just leave it alone, Evan. Leave it alone.
Is there a motion to approve the minutes with one correction? Is there a second? So Ramsey moved to approve, Sean seconded. All those in favor? All opposed? Motion carries. Move on to the next thing on the agenda. Any calls for late additions to the agenda? Do you want to? Okay.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to add on was just giving you guys an update. I told you guys earlier about my idea or intention of creating a site that would hold assembly members accountable to what they promised earlier while they were running, as well as provide a medium for which students could more readily access information regarding what's happening in student government. So I just have an update with that.
We'll move that to the new business.
Do you want to talk about the survey that you sent out as well later in the meeting, if there's time?
Or do you?
Yeah, if there's time. This is just like an FYI when you guys ask for it. So.
Okay. Move on to the next thing on the agenda, which is updates. The first is responses to the four resolutions that are passed right before break. We'll start with resolution 2. To that resolution,
this is a QA.
Yeah. Let me pull it up. Yeah, she responded basically with that she agreed, but she had some questions and a few corrections to the resolution. He responded basically agreeing with the basic idea, but had some questions and some corrections to it. So that's going to be passed on to the transportation, the infrastructure committee to address those questions and then send that back to him. And then he, at the end of his document, he said that he'd be happy to continue to support the changes and modifications after we respond with our questions. The next resolution that passed was Resolution 3, Retiree and Persons with Disabilities Resolution, and the response back to that was a basic thank you for working with him and that the changes had been adopted and the policy had been published. And then next is Resolution 4, and that's a resolution to, with the free Fair Labor Association, and that's actually coming up later in the agenda. And what he said, we have a response to what he said, which is basically thank you for the resolution, and he understands the issues that were brought forward, and he's discussed the concerns with the students in the organization that brought this forward, and they've worked with Mike Powers and Vice President Bruce and Murphy, and will resume further discussions on this resolution with them. So, but we're going to bring that up later in the resolution as to what we want to do, if we want to go forward with that, or if we want to wait for further discussions to happen between them and the students that brought this forward. And then the final resolution that we had passed was Resolution 5, and with that, we have received the Ombudsman report, I think that was passed around, circulated, and then with Mary Beth Grant, she responded saying that she does not have the last 2 years' reports done, but she'd be happy to come and talk with us, so she's been invited to the February meeting to discuss.
And she also said she has filed the reports, I think, to 2008.
Yeah.
We couldn't find any evidence online since 1997 that it's been filed, but she says she's filed the reports since up to 2008, and she's delinquent into the 2009 and 2010 reports. But she's glad to talk to us at the next meeting about where the trends are on campus and what we're seeing.
So does that mean so that there are then 11 years of reports that exist but aren't online?
We can't find it.
Well, we couldn't. If you search the Cornell White website, we could not locate them.
Okay.
And this is something I think we should probably take up with her at the next meeting,
right?
Where are they?
Right. It'd be great if they were like the financial plan. You know, you go to dpb.cornell.edu and
they should be easy to find.
They're just done by a year, and you get links right to the
podcast.
Yeah.
Next item on the agenda is committee chairs updates. You want to start with the infrastructure committee, and also about the meeting dates and times for the semester.
Yeah. It's like the infrastructure committee will probably be meeting on Monday about 4 p.m. And I know that many other committees are like time to settle at the same time. And yeah, we'll be working with David Lee again. He has some other transportation related stuff he would like to work with that committee with. And then there's also some other opportunities to work with us as other universities. I'm looking into that, and then
The CJC.
So I sent out a doodle, and I'm going to give the committee the choice, but we'll be meeting between 3 and 4 on Friday, or 4 and 5 on Friday. More than likely, both times for the first meeting. And that might not be enough, but I do have one thing to say on that. Only one person said they could not do it at all during that time. It was the graduate representative.
You mean Yip Kenny?
Yeah.
Not Matthew.
No, yeah, Yip Kenny.
Okay.
And so
I'll take care of it.
All right. Cool. there was a proposal on the table. Regarding the Title IX issue,
mm-hmm.
That was rejected at the last meeting. At this next meeting, there is a counter proposal that I sent to Jim. I have it right here. I was going to send it out to the entire UA, but I'm not sure if that's allowed or if that's even productive.
It's allowed, but I wouldn't until the subcommittee or until the CJC has had a chance to engage on it.
Yeah, that's...
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps premature.
Yeah, exactly. And so this will be up for a vote at the next meeting, or at least up for discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're going to take it from there. This, I understand the executive committee has asked us for a deadline, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that this issue is rectified by that point.
What is the deadline?
We'll discuss that.
We'll discuss it later.
We need to decide whether we want to set a deadline to take it up to ensure we can get it done before the end of the year. The UA thinks we should, but it would be up to the members to decide whether they want to give that message to CJC or not.
And campus committee?
So campus welfare, in terms of when I intend to have meetings, I'm hoping to just keep it as the same day as before, maintain consistency, so Thursdays from 2 to 3. I listed out the dates I'm hoping to meet: February 16th, March 1st, March 15th, March 29th, April 12th, April 26th, and May 10th. So, yeah, I had a little bit of trouble earlier last semester mm-hmm. in terms of scheduling things and following through with things, but I'm hoping to, you know, I guess, get off that rocky start. So that's in terms of planning. In terms of updates, I wish I had the minutes. My computer was crashed, though, during finals week. Yeah, perfect timing.
But you're still here.
I'm still here. So I don't have the minutes to report, but I can tell you offhand what I remember, and I guess you can fill me in on whatever I don't cover. So the meeting started out with Linda Howell coming in to provide us a couple updates of the recent endeavors that she's been doing, and she talked about the Maxine system and how we can, I guess, advertise that more, make it more exposed so people are aware of that, and of its relevancy to your dear college letters. Additionally, she talked about how off-campus services for Cornell students are, I guess they've been strengthening that a lot because that's one of the deficiencies or weaknesses with Cornell. So they're hoping to strengthen that, and they're hoping to, advertise that more. Along the lines, more specifically, she was talking about how we can integrate or facilitate, relations with local Ithaca residents in which students can live with them or, like, live with older students, like, older people who want to interact with, students with similar academic interests or create a program in which they can engage with local residents. I thought that was a really cool idea. What else was introduced? Oh, very important issue. In terms of, we asked her, like, what issues you see coming up within these coming years or, like, within the direct future, and she was talking about how it's a big issue of how many faculty and staff members, in terms of healthcare coverage, are taking care of an elderly person or their parents, you know, their parents or other loved ones on situations where they're taking care of more than one person. So one of the issues that she was talking about is, like, what is the university going to do about that? Are they going to do anything about that? And if so, what's the best approach? And, you know, a significant demographic of the people who are in Cornell supposedly have that issue. Did I miss that?
I want to say that the report that Ramsey sent around in response to part to some of the questions that I've been pushing, I want to say Bright Horizons has really done a good job.
Yes.
And that's been a real success. The off-campus housing was trying to pair retired or elderly people with students where maybe the students can do a little work in exchange for room and board and just pair two people that might need each other.
Sorry, I'm just going to put in, like, the things a couple highlighted from the document that I bolded.
Is this child care or?
Child care.
Can we cover that under new business?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
The more details?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, and then the next thing that we need to do is appoint a representative for the Judicial Codes Counselor Search Committee. The UA has a representative on that committee to appoint a judicial codes counselor, and then the UA approves them. So.
And Ari, do you want to?
So it can be any member of the UA. The first meeting is scheduled for March 7th at 4:30.
What day
of the week is March 7th?
March 7th is a Wednesday.
So, the UA has to ultimately vote on whoever is recommended by the president out of that search committee. So it's important that this person represents the UA's interests up front so there are no surprises later on. It shouldn't be a heavy time commitment. There'll be a few meetings. Maybe something else. I think they get somewhere between 15 and 30 candidates at the most. All law students.
Generally 2 L's, right? Or are they 3 L's?
It has to be 2 L's. It would have to be 2 L's.
They're 2 L's, yeah. And the dean of the students of the law school is the chair, so Hamilton.
So, do you want to open? Or I guess I want to open up the floor for nominations for this representative. Is there any nominations?
I nominate Phil.
Is there any other nominations? Any other nominations?
You've not been on a search committee. It's a good experience. This is important.
I nominate myself.
Self nominations, by the way, is allowed.
Any other nominations? Any other nominations?
I was on the CJC.
Okay.
Is that you nominating yourself?
Yeah.
All right.
I was going to.
Oh, no.
Any other nominations? Seeing none, we'll move to a vote. Do we want to do it by paper ballot? Yes.
Sure. I need guidance on the proper form.
The only other way to do it is as a series of voice votes. You know, you vote on the first one, and if they win, then they get it. If they lose, then we move to the next one, and so on and so forth. Of course, all three could lose. Robert's rule suggests paper ballots.
Yeah,
we use paper ballots. Ballots magically appearing out of Amy's haversack.
Wow. You guys have to produce your
oxygen mask.
Now,
do they have
paper? There they are. I knew you had the ballot.
Are you okay? What are you doing?
Yeah,
of course.
Sounds great.
Sorry.
And he can't
take
speeches.
Oh, yeah.
What's your platform? And I'm going to be using Ramsey's website to hold you accountable.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's being recorded.
Yes, you can vote for yourself.
How would they know, right? The joy of the anonymous ballot.
No.
Okay.
I don't really know why.
So now when we burn them, does the right color of smoke go up?
I'm not sure where do I punch?
Yeah, where's the hanging chad?
Yeah. The butterfly ballot? Yeah.
So if you get to the records, there's Phil, Robert, and Sean. And we're putting one name on our ballot?
Yeah.
Should we say something?
If you'd like to, yeah.
And that's mutually agreed on if you want to do it.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
I'll go first. I'm interested in this issue because I have a general interest in legal issues. I've been following the whole Title IX issue from early on when it came to UA. And I have whatever life going on with that. And then I feel like it's an important position for the law students and for the university.
Being the chair of the TJC this year, I truly understand the importance of the Judicial Code Council. Last semester, I worked with Kyle extensively. and the JA on this issue, and Kyle was instrumental in bringing stuff to the TJC and, you know, explaining how in practice things would work. So I understand the importance of the judicial code counselor and, you know, what they bring to the table, and I understand, you know, what the ideal code counselor is and would be.
Yeah, I didn't see the inner workings like that, but when I was on the TJC, the coach counselor was there all the time, so I got an idea of what they brought to the table. And that's kind of where my opinion went.
Yeah,
only if we reach consent.
Yes.
Anyone else?
Should I leave? Should I move on?
I think we can move on and get you interrupted from there.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and move on to new business while they like the votes. First item of business is for us to determine whether we want to take following action on President Scorn's decision on the UA Resolution 4. If you want to talk a little bit about that, Jim.
Sure. And actually, I'm the one who put this on the agenda for this week. Melissa told you, we set up a resolution for, the recommendation in resolution 4 was to sever ties with the FLA. Mm-hmm. President Scorton obviously did not sign that resolution. Rather, he wants to engage in further dialogue. So whenever our resolutions go up and don't come back the way we hope, we want to look into, you know, do we have follow-on action or perhaps we missed something. This is one of those cases where after the resolution went up and came back down, I was put in contact with a man named Mike Powers from the University Communications Office who works with licensing and those kinds of things. I had not spoken to Mike directly before. Certainly I'm aware of the licensing aspects of the university. But he shed some light on this issue that probably would have been helpful before we sent it up. Basically, and I don't want to overly quote, I talked to Mike, in fact, today about 30, 40 minutes about this because President Scorton consulted him before responding to our resolution. And so he was directly in President Scorton's thought process before he replied to us. And basically, it's Mike's view, and I have to believe, although I, you know, didn't speak to President Scorton about this, that he agrees with this, that the FLA serves a very useful purpose, and they may not be a perfect organization, and I think Mike agrees that there are some criticisms the Students Against Sweatshops have leveled against the FLA, but that doesn't undermine the complete value of the organization. Both the FLA and the Workers' Rights Consortium are two different organizations. They have similar goals in a large process, but when you get down to how they conduct their business, the FLA is different than the WRC. You know, Mike and Cornell, through President Scorton, believe that both are useful in that process. Did you have a... Okay. He says they're both terribly small and underfunded, but he goes so far to say he believes Cornell agrees with the FLA's position on things about the 95th percentile, I mean, to a high degree. So in the wake of our resolution, he had been speaking with the Students Against Sweatshops previously, but he has re-engaged them. He had already planned to have a meeting with I believe the title is Executive Director of the FLA, but the chairman, the executive director, the head person of the FLA. That meeting had to be rescheduled. They're looking to try and reschedule in the next 30, 60 days, and he intends to take two students from the Students Against Sweatshops with him to that meeting. So there's a very constructive dialogue going on there. The long and short of this is that a couple things. I think we missed a coordination step before we brought the resolution forward. And I take that on principally as somebody who helps coordinate these things before they come to you. We worked hard from November to December with the Students Against Sweatshops. I have to confess, I did not work as equally hard making sure I had covered the other side with the university, because the Students Against Sweatshops really did have all their compelling documents in line, the letters from the president, and other things. But it showed a weakness in our process that I'll address, I think, in a minute, so that we can try and avoid doing that again. Whether that information would have tempered the resolution at all, I don't know. Mike has agreed to come to the February meeting and talk about the FLA and this issue in general, and so I said, well, absolutely, we'd be glad to have you. And so from the standpoint of whether we would like to re-engage President Skorton in some manner on this issue or not, I would request, and Evan can correct me if I do that wrong, but that we table this until the February meeting, and Mike can present perhaps what we didn't hear from the Students Against Sweatshops, and we would invite the Students Against Sweatshops to be there as well, you know, and make sure that they would agree to that, you know, perhaps how they're characterized, you know, those kind of things, and determine whether maybe President Skorton has this right, and our resolution perhaps was maybe a little misplaced or not, and determine whether we would want to re-engage the administration in some manner on this issue. But I've heard enough from Mike Powers to know that there's some credible things that you would want to know, and more than I can speak out here and as a level of expertise that I wouldn't be right for me to even attempt to field your questions. He unfortunately couldn't make today's meeting. We did invite him, but it was rather last minute, and he has agreed to come in February. So unless there's objections or questions, then I do propose we table follow-on actions of the February meeting.
You see if Alex wants to say anything.
I think it was a fair characterization. A day after that email was sent, that are in the notes, five of us, including myself, met with Mike Powers, Susan Murphy, Tommy Bruce, and President Skorton to discuss what we wanted to do with the FLA going forward. It was from that conversation that we found out that Mike was going down to D.C. to meet with the executive director, who is actually second in command, even though he's called the executive director, which makes no sense. So that meeting will be your schedule. I'm going to be one of the students that goes down along with another member of Students Against Sweatshops. I think a lot of what you just said is a lot of what Mike has said about how we agree on a lot of the issues, on their ultimate goals. But it's always been that there are a few issues that are sticking that we think are worth disaffiliating from. And what came out of that meeting was we're working with Mike currently to make a list of things that both the administration and the students think are wrong and think need to be changed. And that list will be brought down to our meeting. So I agree with tabling it and waiting on anything else, but I just want to clarify that there has been movement forward, and President Skorton said at that meeting that if we got insufficient response to the list of the things that the administration and students disagree with, that he would be for immediate disaffiliation.
Hmm. Okay, the last piece I haven't heard, but I mean, you were physically there, so actually, I mean, it's facilitated. It's done its job of facilitating the issue and speaking to the step of coordinating resolutions. Though I really wish we had connected with Mike before we took a vote. We missed him. I shouldn't have missed him. We, the process, shouldn't have missed him or his office. And that is kind of a concern of a different level. In speaking with Ari, we think we have a common sense process that we've tried to follow, but not too successfully. We would like to get these resolutions posted or out officially in, you know, in a publicly available version a week prior, along with the, you know, next meeting agenda. So a week prior to the next UA. Something I had missed, but that Ari educated me about, or probably re-educated me about, is there's a listserv info at, you know, assemblies or university assemblies that not only reaches all of us, but students and anybody else outside can subscribe to. So when our agenda goes out, currently it goes out to the members of the UA, but at the point we send it in this format, it's a publicly available document, and there's no reason why it shouldn't be sent out to this larger address list. And if we can do that a week in advance, then people in the Office of Communications can see if there's somebody, you know, see what's brewing and make sure that we've touched with those people. Organizations that have issues coming forward have an opportunity to make sure that we didn't miss them if they have something to say, and there's a better chance that they can be involved in the process or even physically present when needed. So I don't see anything that is objectionable there. The UA exec thinks that's a sound idea. I would ask for any comments or criticisms or concerns about that as a general plan. A week doesn't always sound like a lot of time, but the reality is, you know, being a month in advance is unrealistic. But if we can meet a solid week and it goes out to a distribution list for people who decide to follow our issues, from the press to the administration to interested students and staff and faculty, et cetera, all to the good. And we could potentially not miss somebody that perhaps we should have touched beforehand.
Well, I just want to, like, I completely agree with what you said. I just want to add on to the fact of how I've actually gotten responses and feedback from people. Like, whenever I email to the info assembly listserv, I actually get responses from people saying, like, hey, I'm interested. Keep me on this. Like, mm-hmm. what you guys are doing. I want you to address this. So it is actually pretty helpful, to at least to some extent, in terms of, I guess, maintaining communication with other people.
And one thing you just said there that we'll have to monitor and see whether we would need to modify some things, but if people can hit reply all, you know, we get 20,000 reply all to, you know, either don't send me this or, you know, we may have to manage it a little differently, but initially we can at least push and give contact information if somebody wants to do that. I would further add that if we can't put it out a week in advance, that if we're going to actually vote on something, say the December meeting, you know, that really hasn't been out there for an overly long time, that we institute a rule that we would need to, you know, essentially waive our rules to take a vote and move it forward at that meeting. If it didn't rise to the test of automatically being required to be voted on at a meeting later, you know, we have a lot of things that fall in that gap, that we would take some formal action if it hasn't been out there a week because of some urgent situation. And if none presents itself, then we brief it at the meeting and, it, you know, we address it at the following one, so they would maybe get 4 weeks' notice.
So two things. First, on the point you just mentioned, the best way to do that is simply to put a line in the bylaws that say all resolutions need to be distributed, pick a number, 24 hours in advance or whatever, and then there's, of course, a motion to suspend the rules.
Right.
To have the rule in place, you know, we can amend our own bylaws internally without an enormous rigmarole. We could do that. No, requires prior notice.
Yes.
So we can't do it at this meeting, but we could maybe do it at the next meeting or the meeting after that.
Well, so let me put it out there. Let me consider this notice. I would like to bring the next meeting such a rule as simply stated as possible, that's what we would do, I think that'll facilitate the process and lock in something that should be doable and better than currently. So, as you know, when the meeting's here, this tends to be all the emails start passing at about 5 o'clock the night before. And I think if the deadline were a week before, that churn would happen a week earlier. But we need to make an official deadline or...
Well, if it helps, I'd be happy to show you the equivalent language in the GPSA charter that requires us to distribute. Our requirement is 24 hours in advance, though we typically do 4 days in advance. It says at least 24 hours.
We need to look at ours. Yes, please. And we may have a 24-hour rule, which, again, we...
I don't know. The other thing I was going to say is that I think the list idea is great. I think I'm on all the committee info lists. Thingamajigs, and I enjoy getting those emails. But I would say, and I not that you were saying this or that anybody was implying this necessarily, but that, of course, does not obviate the need to identify key stakeholders and reach out to them as
That's
well.
Correct.
Because, of course, you know, sure, you've sent the resolution out a month in advance to this list, but if Mike Powers wasn't on the list, to use this example, we'd still be in the same situation.
Behind the scenes, I'm working on a resolution. Ari and I called it a pre-flight checklist, just because we were talking Air Force vernacular yesterday, make sure we were connected. But essentially, if a resolution is going forward, where's the support for each of the whereases? Whereas Nike and Adidas, okay, you've named them, prove it. You know, whereas, you know, if it's not self-evident, where's the support that backs up the whereases? Where can it be found? And likewise, who has been coordinated with, and somewhere from, you know, the Office of Communications, if nothing else, you know, we ask them, who here, if we can't identify the stakeholders, you know, formally ask for their assistance in identifying anybody to make sure that we haven't inadvertently missed somebody, because we wouldn't want to do that. So yes, I'm working that process too, and how we might or might not codify that, I don't know yet, but it's common senseless. If for the most part, I think.
Well, I won't resort to shutting down my personal website to protest any UA just yet, then.
Not just yet.
So is there any further discussion from the members on Resolution 4? Table it to the February meeting where Mike Powers can represent himself, but it sounds that both sides are working and that there's a constructive process moving forward.
I'm going to ask, is the February meeting 2 weeks from now or the February meeting 4 weeks from now?
I'm anticipating 4 weeks from now, but I suppose that's a great discussion.
We have one on the calendar on the website for the 14th and one for the 28th. So it would depend if it's decided that we need the meeting on the 14th or not.
I'm a newlywed. I can't come.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I like the 14th. Traditionally, as the members know, we try and hold one meeting a month. It tends to be at the end of the month, unless issues require the early meeting.
So for now, we'll say the 28th.
That'll
be tabled.
Are there any objections?
And you have to put my comment in a minute to tape. I need it.
That's right. Send that up to the info list.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm sorry, Ron. Are we empty?
Oh, no, I didn't have any.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said you were. Okay.
So, since we decided that's been tabled, we'll move back to the appointing a representative for the Judicial Codes Counselor Search Committee. The result is there's a tie between Robert and Phil, so there should be a runoff between the two of them. So we're going to vote again, and if you two would like to speak again, you're more than welcome to.
And Sean gets to break
the...
No.
Where are you voting, man?
Where's the vice president when you need him? Subtle U.S. Constitution references.
We got that.
I'm still worried I'm in control.
Are we doing speeches again?
Then? Yeah, would you like to speak again, or?
We asked. I don't know that they have any.
Oh, it's just between you and
Robert.
Yeah.
Oh. You can buck up. That's right. I mean, it's just real strong.
Yeah, we're in Tic Tac promo.
Oh,
where's my promise to divert taxpayer money?
Yes. Where's my lobby?
Can I use this information to buy stocks and then make money off of that?
That's right.
Maybe the discussion on it is the way you're just making this discussion now from us to find out what the expectations are much for us to then.
Personally, I, knowing what's coming down the pike and how important the Judicial Code Counselor is in this situation with Title IX, you need to be very abreast of that situation. because it will change a lot of things in terms of the code and in terms of how it is done in practice. So whoever, whether it's you or I, you need to understand this issue.
Yeah, I would be Steve on the learning curve.
Anybody else?
Well, then we look at the votes. We'll go ahead and move on to new business, item B. We need to decide as a university assembly whether we want to set up a deadline for the CJC to present a resolution or present two sides depending upon what happens in their meetings. I don't know if you want to talk on that more.
If I may. So we hoped, we the CJC had hoped that we would come to some resolution last semester on the issue. I mean, you start something with some sense of optimism. Well, the sides have different views of the standing of the Dear Colleagues letter. They have different views on how Cornell might react to it. And then there's the rank and file issues of, you know, if we pull two things out of the code, there are things that are similar but not the same, and what does that do to the code? You know, the very practical implementation side. So it has been a slow process.
And I pushed it along as hard as mm-hmm. I possibly could to try to get this done last semester. And, I mean, Jim, you were there.
I would attest that we tried to do that. So I can tell you, as Phil said, and we put up a resolution at the end of the semester. It was voted down. It was voted down significantly. It wasn't close. I mean, they voted it down. I can't remember the exact.
It's like 8-3 or something.
Yeah, but I mean, it was a significant, and that was the potential solution of moving this into the Cornell policy, where the other sexual harassment and sexual assault charges are handled, except for students.
It would have went to Section 604.
6.4. Policy 6.4.
And then it would be, we would basically be given authority to the powers that be, and they would have just made it work. And again,
and it applies to everybody now but students. The bottom line is the CJC looked at that and said overwhelmingly no. I think people are aware, because we've talked to this body before about it, that Professor Claremont, and it's not only Professor Claremont, obviously it was 8-3, but I think he was the rallying point initially, perhaps for a different way of handling this, and I hope I'm not mischaracterizing that. But he has a group of folks. They have, in fact, because at the meeting that we voted down the last resolution, we asked them to then, because they were the folks that were had the support, their ideas, their concepts had support. We asked them to champion a resolution at our next CJC meeting that would be more in line with where their view of things. As Phil said, and he sent it to me yesterday, here it is. I don't want to discuss it yet. I only scanned it, and you know, so when we have our next meeting, there will be something to discuss and think about and amend and then potentially vote on. If that vote's successful, then probably in two meetings, perhaps three, the CJC will have some firm recommendations for you, for you, the University Assembly, to forward to President's Court. If it breaks down and that gets voted down, or you know, whatever, we don't know yet.
What I would say is I'm all for having a soft deadline, because that's something I could bring up at the meeting and really start pushing it ahead, you know, instead of it just being, you know, two rams butting heads at each other. Again, I'd want it to be a soft deadline, just because if this gets voted down, which it might, it's a good chance it might, that's going to, you know, delay this process for maybe a month after that. So,
and so I don't know how it's going to turn out. When I look at our calendar, and you know, we all turn into pumpkins at the last meeting of the year, or the day after the last meeting of the year, as far as our ability to represent, and then we get into, you know, off semester authority, which is, you know, essentially emergency in scope. I'm concerned that, well, if they come to quick resolution, then this will come through and we have time to work it. If this gets voted down, it may be something where the compromise resolution or whatever might occur might need to happen here rather than in the CJC and then come to here.
Is that allowed in our bylaws or our constitution?
I mean, it's our committee.
Right.
So yeah, so...
The CJC itself doesn't amend the code. The CJC exists to recommend amendments to the code to the UA, which then has the authority to amend the code. So the UA doesn't need to ask the permission of its committee to make amendments.
So, in looking at the calendar and talking to the UA exec, we have a meeting, we have meetings March 13th and 27th. Ordinarily, that would mean the 27th. I would recommend to you that we hold a, or plan to hold a meeting on March 13th, 6 weeks from now, where we would expect the CJC, if not before, meaning at the February 28th meeting, to brief us on either the recommended and voted on resolution that they have hopefully passed, but if not, bring the issues forward, where they stand, and we begin to take on that process effective the March 13th meeting. As a practical matter, that probably allows the CJC three real opportunities to work at it. If they're close, you know, maybe Phil can say, hey, well, you know, here's the status and give me to the 27th. But if they're not close, then I think that it would it would be in the best interest of the UA to then take it up firsthand with the principals that the CJC is working with and learn from the CJC all the things that they have worked through and begin the process ourselves so that we can forward a meaningful resolution to the president before the end of the term. I think if we do not do that, and President Scorton has not said this in any way that I'm aware of, but based on the agreement we came to last term, basically I believe that the university will, over the summer, work without us or, you know, invite us to come and be part of their commission on what they intend to do because we have been unable to come to a resolution on this. Okay, so I guess what I'm putting forth is a motion that we inform the CJC officially that the main body of the University Assembly intends to take up this issue at our March 13th meeting, or earlier if the CJC is able to bring a recommendation forward. Again, that may be easy, but I suspect that there's still going to be some fits and bumps and that we're all going to need to ultimately be involved. Because this is important, because it is complex, even if they bring forward a supported resolution from the subcommittee, I think you're going to want to revet many pieces of it before it's voted, you know, officially out of the University Assembly, even though, you know, many of us are on that subcommittee. I think there's that potential, and we need to be ahead of that. So,
I second that motion.
All those in favor?
No, there's discussion.
Oh, discussion. Sorry.
I said my piece. So,
so I,
as the chair, I don't see anything wrong with that. I think. That
I mean, I to respond to Phil's point about the soft deadline, I don't think it makes sense to say it that way. I mean, I think the way I agree with Jim's assessment of the calendar, I mean, the latest that we could possibly pass any resolution is basically the end of April. I think there's one meeting after that, but the idea is that it's a business meeting for the people who are taking over next year. So we can't do it any later than that. You know, there's the possibility of a meeting in mid-April if necessary, end of March, mid-March if necessary. I mean, we're going to want to have, I think, two meetings to deal with this. March 13th is really the only way that we can make sure that we can get at least two meetings to deal with it. And the consequence is exactly like Jim said. The CJC provides to the UA a recommendation, having amended the code to make it compliant, you know, per council's whatever, or failing that if we don't have it on our desk by 24 hours in advance of March 13th. the UA will move ahead on its own.
What would be the, no, this, if things break down in meetings again, in the committee, how would the UA, would you, the UA want the both proposals that had been presented, you know, could be talked about here so we could reconcile both of them? Or like how would we
the,
work that?
The idea would be that the committee would have, I guess, two different sides or two different perspectives on it. If they don't have a resolution that everyone agrees upon, or the majority agrees upon, they would have two different perspectives, and that those would both be presented to the university assembly along with the reasoning behind them and some information on previous discussions, and then the university assembly would take those, that information, and then we ourselves would go through the process during those two meetings to develop something we can present to President Scorton.
Yes. Right. And I would say also by sticking a line in the sand of the team, again, this involves Nelson Roth and his people. It involves the committee. You know, we can make sure that we get ahead of this far enough that we can make sure they can meet the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to want this issue. We're going to want the principals invited, and we don't want somebody like Nelson Roth's office. We're not able to make the meeting.
Yeah, we're going to want someone there. We're going to want the JA there.
We're going to want them or their, you know, the Title IX people who can really talk the issue present and not, you know, well, I was in the CJC and I think I can represent what I think they would say. I think it's important enough and complex enough. We want the experts, such as they, you know, to maximize the opportunity for them to be a part of the process.
That's also the benefit of having the deadline, is that we can tell them now, months in advance.
Correct.
Or over a month in advance.
All their meeting minutes are electronic.
You
have access to those.
Yeah, the CJC minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I'd be interested
so that
in if minutes are posted, because there isn't really a CJC website where I see a minutes tab, but maybe I missed it.
You go to the minutes tab.
Under CJC?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There you go. I missed it.
The November 30th minutes haven't been posted because they haven't been ratified yet, but...
Yeah, yeah, it's there.
November 6th.
So assembly.cornell.edu/CJC/meeting. All three.
Okay. Is there any other further discussion on the deadline? Established.
You know, I have one other. One of the sticking points in the discussion seems to be about what exactly the legal mandate is, and there's a sort of gulf of opinion between some members of the judicial committee and the university counsel's office. And one of the things that I'm concerned about is, you know, the whole question of what to do might turn on which legal mandate is recognized. I don't know how important it is that the committee be, you know, preparing to deal with both directions on that, because I could picture, you know, if it comes up to the UA and the UA decides that a legal assumption that was adopted in the committee is not what it agrees with, then the committee will have done all of this work on the wrong premise. Should the committee be preparing for...
Well, I guess I suppose so, but maybe I don't see confusion in the committee on the legal premise. There's definitely disagreement on what does the Dear Colleagues letter mean, but I am going under the assumption, and I may be wrong, so correct me here, is that we've been given a list of things that the university has said where our code is not compliant with the Dear Colleagues. We need a resolution that resolves those disconnects. I understand some of that can be in the eye of the beholder, but in general, I mean, it's, you know, the concepts are pretty clear. They're not necessarily easy to do.
Well, the Claremont letter, the sort of, this is a letter that was, if you go through the minutes, you'll see that it was proposed by several members of the committee. The premise of that letter is that list of compliance issues that the council's office identified are not actually compliance issues. I mean, that
like to just interject there. Yes, that is one of the issues, but from my understanding is we were past that issue and we were going with the assumption that we were going to change something because of the Dear Colleague letter. I mean, that was an issue, but you know, I'm not sure if you've read this, and I'll send this to you. This is not talking about you know, whether we should ignore this or not. It's actually changing it to some better compliance, so to speak.
Well, so I think we need to monitor it. Let me talk to you and make sure I understand.
Okay.
But yeah, if there's some prepping, we'll need to do it. I mean, ultimately, I think my view is, who's President Scorton going to turn to? He's going to turn to Nelson Roth and say, does this satisfy the Dear Colleague concerns? So in that sense, Nelson Roth's view probably trumps, or if we're going to submit something that maybe he wouldn't agree to, and we should know that because we're going to coordinate this with the principals, then we would have to justify our position completely as to why President Scorton should consider this legal nuance. I don't think we'll go there, but I don't know.
Does the CJC know what Nelson Roth?
Yes. I mean, he has communicated directly with us.
Well,
he's physically been
there. See, one thing that I brought up in the CJC meeting, and you might remember us talking about this, and I said, well, is this basically an issue where it's, you know, Nelson Roth's way or, you know, no way? Because if President Scorton is going to ask Nelson, and Nelson disagrees with what we're talking about, is it dead in the water before it even gets to President Scorton?
It shouldn't be.
Well,
but you need to be aware of who's...
Is the university going to defer to the people that they hire to be their
President Scorton's going to turn to his attorney.
They defer to the people.
There's always a lot,
but he doesn't...
Nothing
the you have to justify it to us.
Yeah. The council's office is the university's authority on what legal mandates are. There's very clear university rules about that, because the council's office is the one that has to go defend this in court eventually.
Right.
So my point being that if anything we would put forth, we would want to know that Nelson Roth's or the Title IX person that he's assigned to really work this believe that this would resolve the Dear Colleague concerns. And if they say no, either we need to amend it or we would certainly need to justify why we don't want to go that way, understanding full well that President Scorton is going to talk to his attorney and then make a decision. So I think if we acted against, if we don't have their stamp of approval, then I think we will know that beforehand and understand the risk of not complete slam dunk.
Well, that's what I'm inserting in the discussion is I don't think that all of the members of the CJC were clear on that as of the last meeting that was had, and we don't have a minute yet, but...
Well, then I will take a commitment as a member of the CJC to raise the issue, and that one way or another, we're going to need to know whether Nelson Roth's office would agree with our ultimate solution, and if not, where they disagree.
So, and as the chair, I'll make sure it's on the...
It's worth being, if I may, I don't want to take up too much time on this, but, you know, it's worth... maybe being precise on this if we can. So there's an 8-page memo from the council's office that was sent, I guess, to the UA, basically saying these are the areas with the code. And I think that I can take a moment and read some of them to you. I mean, there are things like if you do something off campus, there needs to be a provision to deal with that. People need to be able to complain on behalf of a student, as opposed to just the student themselves needs to be able to complain. Likewise, like their parents would need to be able to complain. Mediation can't be used in sexual assault cases. Adjudicators and investigators need to be trained and impartial. Prompt and reasonable time frames. Schools shouldn't wait for criminal trials to conclude. And I think there's one more... about having the presence of a lawyer. If one side gets to have a lawyer, the other side should get to have a lawyer, and people should be notified of the outcome. I think, at least in my, I only attend one CJC meeting, but from what I can tell, I don't think any of those are controversial. But there are two that are controversial, the two that I've left out, and those would be the burden of proof and the equal appeal rights. And those things, I think, are serious sticking points. I agree that it's nuanced and that it's complicated, but I mean, the sense that I've gotten, granted not as a member of the committee, is that people take both of those very seriously. The burden of proof is, of course, I mean, something that is enshrined in what the Fourth Amendment, and that's people, of course, think Fifth Amendment, think by analogy to the Constitution. Of course, we're not talking about the Constitution. Like, what it says is nobody should be deprived of life or limb without due process, and that's what says the beyond a reasonable doubt. So we don't use that standard. We use clear and convincing. They say we have to use preponderance. And the other one is dual appeal rights, and that's basically an issue of, again, in a constitutional context, double jeopardy. Basically, what that is saying is that in a criminal trial, if you're accused of murder and you're acquitted of murder, you cannot again be charged with that same murder. What this would be is if you are accused of sexual harassment or sexual violence and you're acquitted of that charge, they need to be able to bring that same charge again against you. The complainant needs to be able to appeal the outcome the same way the accused can appeal the outcome. So you can see why, you know, people might get stuck on these points. These are really the two issues. And I think
it gets a little more complex than that as well, just because, you know, in the 6.4, you know, we have a set guideline right now for students in the code. Or, you know, it goes to the hearing appeals board, you know, it goes to JA, you know, not in that order, just the opposite order. And, you know, there's an appeals process at each level. In 6.4 for faculty and staff, it's completely different. So, and it, you know, there's contradictions with the code.
Well, it's because that fundamentally it is an administrative process that we have elevated to more of a criminal process in our code. But the process is fundamentally administrative because our only ultimate remedy is expulsion regarding students.
So,
you know,
I wonder if I may go on for just one more moment. If you look on page 6 of this menu memo, basically this is the counsel's office own language. I won't read it all to you, but basically it sort of goes back and forth saying here are the pros and cons of changing this language. It doesn't say you should change this language, or it must be changed in this way in order to be compliant, or whatever. It says, here are some issues. So what I'm saying is that I, at least from reading this memo, and I have no other, at least myself, no other communications in counsel's office, it's not clear that counsel's office has even reached a clear decision on what they believe to be an ideal outcome. The issue, as I briefly mentioned back in December,
On the first page of that memo, it says the underlying text is the explicit code language that must be changed and or commentary.
Right, yeah. And the underlying portion is the one that says we use a clear and convincing standard, which is higher than the civil law but lower than the such and such. And then right below that, on page 8, there's the underlying commentary from counsel's office. And it says, note, must be changed for compliance. Community members, including the JA, have raised questions about this. One, some concerns include, one, it's irrational to have different burdens of proof. Two, it makes no sense to tilt the system so heavily. Three, the campus judicial system is not a criminal system. Four, having dual standards could inappropriately burden the hearing board. I mean, what I'm reading is that they're saying, we think you need to change this language, but we're not sure how. And there seem like there are a lot of downsides to just simply saying, like we did back in April, cases of this nature will be treated under this standard, other cases will be treated under that standard.
Well, and again, you can see how complex it is and why, coming back to the actual motion on the floor, we probably need to set a deadline to make sure that we can forward something constructive. I would say, though, that whatever we put forward or ultimately would intend to put forward, we're going to want JA's view of, is there something we didn't address or that they wouldn't disagree with? In deference to Randy, we may decide with that knowledge that we still would push it forward. I would say that we would heavily consider maybe seeing if we could find language that might be workable, but either way, depending on how we do it. As long as we know, you know, that disconnect has, and we would want counsel's coordination anyway, on something like this, because, again, that's who he's going to turn to.
Yeah. I think it would be ideal, if at all possible, to have either Nelson Roth or another representative from counsel's office present at all CJC meetings.
And I believe we do have that right now.
again, I've only attended one, and I know nobody was present that time, but he was present at the previous.
Yes,
meeting,
he was.
And that to me is the best, most effective way that we can make sure that somebody is in that room saying, excuse me, if you pass this resolution, I'm just going to tell the president to ignore it. Or, if you pass this resolution, I think you've solved the problem. Or any variation.
We will certainly
respectfully and thoughtfully decline to adopt it.
Of course.
Thank
of course.
You, Tommy Bruce.
Anyway, basically what I would say is that if I can paraphrase Kevin Claremont correctly, there's no doubt in his mind, I don't think, about whether or not we should or shouldn't comply. It's a question with regard to what it applies to. Ari and I have emailed back and forth on this. I'm not a lawyer, but when you read the OCR letter, you don't see it talking about things like penalties. Ari disagrees with me on this point. If this is what they're talking about, they're incredibly vague about it. They don't at any point say...
Both sides of this argument and the CJC have made it clear that they all think that the Dear College letter was poorly written and that they confused their what would typically be very defined legal terms and they use them interchangeable and they mean different things. So, but it sounds to me, if perhaps a friendly amendment, one, we want the CJC's best advice on or before March 13th, and you're informing the CJC that if they have it, we intend to fully vet what comes forward with the Nelson Roth's staff to ensure we know what they think about it and or if they have disconnects with what comes forward. So do your work with that understanding that we're not going to
and the US
poke them in the eye.
The U.S. should have the
consideration.
The U.S. should have the understanding of what we, like, we're going to do the best we can because we're, as you can
right.
see, how complex this issue. So we come to you with two different resolutions.
If we don't like it, we're going to fire you. So.
We are going to dock
no,
your pay.
We were glad you
we will
it
have
you.
That pay.
Thank you. Thank you. So.
Okay.
Being presumptuous, is there any more discussion on the motion?
Yeah. In past CJC meetings, Jim Mingle came. And I think he's very good. I think he has more of a liberal arts outlook than a bulldog outlook. I think that says it clearly. And maybe he can come to me and help. He's tough, but he listens.
Well, I guess we can consider whether I mean, we can.
Yeah.
Anybody can come.
Yeah.
That's not the guy who came.
No, Nelson Roth came himself.
Yeah.
He is the secretary of the corporation, who is also an attorney.
Sorry, I think it'd be helpful for me to clarify the role. He's another member of the council's office who's the person with expertise on Title IX issues specifically.
Jim Mingle is
the university council, so
right.
he's responsible for the council's office and he's the secretary of the corporation.
Yes, okay.
And he fills roles for both of those. I think Nelson Roth would probably be the more likely person just both because of his availability and because this is his subject area. And also, I don't know if you had a chance to meet. I thought he was very
liberal,
eligible, and
who knows?
Well, he's also both of them are law professors at Cornell as well. They both teach. They both are very good at explaining
Nelson?
And listening. Yeah.
You think about Nelson?
Yeah.
Well, I think we'll extend the office to the office of the council, and they'll determine who they think is best and
but,
we. I mean, I wouldn't say it's Nelson.
I wouldn't view it as a minus if it was Nelson instead of Jim. I think they're both very good.
So we've only got 15 minutes.
Yeah.
15 minutes.
So
we have three more items.
We should probably move to a vote. Unless anyone else has a burning comment. Okay. All those in favor of setting the deadline for March 13th? All those opposed? Motion passes. No, could we? Oh, okay, all those in favor, please.
I think it was unanimous, right?
I thought.
I think we had two abstentions.
All those opposed. We have abstentions. One abstention. So.
We have 14 people in this room, so that's 12 in favor.
No, there's 13 more.
Yeah. Sorry, 11 in favor.
One in favor and then
11-0.
Okay.
11-0-1.
One thing to say, there is one member, two members from now.
One. How many abstentions? Oh, you abstain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, 11-0-3. Okay. I forgot.
I would say there are two members of the CJC who are abroad this semester. So I think we have to reappoint them. I'm not sure that process works.
You who? Which members are?
Talk to Sean.
You would go to the
Talk to Sean.
Yeah, he can take care of it.
Code enforcement.
Oh.
So before we move to item C, we're going to go back to the representative on the Judicial Code Council Search Committee and the election or the votes tallied up to Robert with 7 and Phil with 6, so Robert will be the representative.
This is like the Florida.
Sean?
Supreme Court.
Yeah, I think so.
Is anybody challenging the Department of Education?
By this vote. Oh. No, but is your brother the governor of this room? No. Yes, that has come up. And it's an issue that we've not ignored at this point, but it's just we've looked past it because that's the issue. Should we forget about this or not?
Nelson reported at the meeting where he was present that nobody has challenged it on the points that are controversial here. So the two points that have been mentioned, nobody has raised challenges. There hasn't been litigation about those issues at all, one way or the other.
But he also said they have a network of support network between universities, and there's been a lot of discussion about what?
Yeah.
It was a bit of a surprise.
So, moving on to the next item under new business. From the employee assembly, do you want to just give a brief on the survey? A briefing on the survey.
So the survey results are out. I don't know if everybody had a chance to look at them. But basically, most employees, 80% of employees, are satisfied with working at Cornell. Had a great response rate and 1,700 written comments. Mary read them all.
Mary Appleman.
Yeah, read them all.
By the way, this is Tanya. I think everyone here knows this, but for those who might not, she's the chair of the employee assembly.
Okay.
So they've been working to put together kind of a review of the questions to see how they correlate with each other. There's not a lot of benchmarking of other universities out there for us to compare to, so we'll do this again in a couple of years and compare to ourselves. Mary and David are meeting or have met today with the leadership, the vice presidents, deans, directors, to talk about the results. Basically, the takeaways for them is that, you know, they look down into individual units and pockets of campus. There's not much difference between the overall picture and in small units. There are some swings, but the majority of it is consistent. The four items that she was bringing that to them that they would want to work on is a way to approach supervisor evaluation in a meaningful way. There was a lot of feedback from employees and they don't have a good opportunity to review their supervisors, so looking for ways to find meaningful ways to evaluate. Another key component that came out is career development opportunities, career choices. So they are going to be working on that area. Rewards and recognition for staff. So that's another key area they're going to look at. And then workload distribution, job classification, compensation, and equity of across areas. They will be sending individual comments down, but only to the dean and vice president level, so department chairs won't get individual comments for their units. They're going to keep them at the higher level because they're concerned about people knowing who might have written comments. And they don't want, they want people to feel comfortable with what they've written. And even at that level, down to the deans and the VPs, they've looked to neutralize the comments, so they're not going to, anyone who wrote in my name is blah, that's taken out, I work in department blah, that's taken out. So anything that's really identifying the individual, they've kind of sanitized that as much as possible so they get the point of the comment across and not necessarily. And then once they've had that meeting, hopefully they'll have some consensus on how they're going to move things forward. The one piece that Mary did talk about is, you know, the first three items, the supervisor review, career development, awards, rewards and recognition can be worked from the top down, but the workload stuff is going to have to work from the bottom up, because the deans and the VPs won't necessarily be able to say, oh, in unit X, this is how you need to fix your workload, so they're going to try to figure it out. So that's kind of the big takeaways. And then they made us this lovely little word picture of, you know, based on size, how many times the different words were said in the comments. I don't know if anybody cares.
Cornell or work was the number one? Work,
yeah,
was the number one?
I believe work was the number one, Cornell, and then
they're Wordle. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Excellent.
Yeah.
I love those things.
Right. So cool.
There is a website. I don't know what it is.
It's called Wordle, I think, isn't it? The website that makes those things. Cornell. I put one in a paper one.
I guess the only thing that you said that I would want to comment on is we hope to do it. So this is essentially saying a Cornell benchmark. I think there's probably are some people out there we could compare against, but I don't know how hard people look. Having said that, I would request that the EA think about pressing them for a definitive, we'll do this again every 2 years.
Yes.
It needs to become institutional, or so you don't know whether you made headway or made it worse, or you know.
So the plan is to make it institutional the same way they do, I guess they do a faculty survey and a student survey, but the question is how soon again they'll want to do it, and they may want to do it sooner rather than later. But we're waiting to kind of have all the pieces together. But Maureen Clarkberg and her office have done a stellar job at kind of pulling all this together, because they didn't have any easy.
I thought the survey was a good one, having being a staff member who took it, and having done these many times in the past, not here, but in other places. This was well constructed and well done, I thought. Generally, I'm used to seeing this done annually, but there's an expense to that, and there's a time commitment to that, and so, but it would be good to get commitment for the next one.
Yeah, we were trying to get them to commit to the 3 or 4 year.
Well, I hope it would be better than that, but you know, that's just me.
I think they're so busy crunching the data they didn't want to even think about doing it again. We asked them really, I mean, we got this right when we came back to the new year, and they hadn't even really had focused on
this. Well, I know Mary Upperman, I think, if it was reported correctly, read every single comment.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's the most constructive use of her time. Somebody should help bin things and
yeah.
Just give her the Wordle.
Yeah.
there was a look for commonality. But Mary said some of them were very difficult to read. There
sure.
were some really good ones, but there were some really, really good ones.
Yeah, I wanted to ask if any student employees or graduate research assistants or teaching assistants were included in the survey, and if not, if there is any kind of plan to do any kind of separate survey for them.
So this went out to anyone who had a staff title, and that included lecturers.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone had an academic employee title, I think. Ari, do you remember?
The answer is no.
To graduate students
which
who
I think
are
and that comment
teaching assistants.
Perhaps it should.
I thought Marissa
was. I don't know, or somebody else.
I don't think they're speculating.
Okay. I can find out.
So this,
okay.
This is I think the answer to that question is almost certainly no. I would
that's
guess
what I
like people working as TAs or RAs or whatever.
No, and
of course the reason for that, and if you talk to the dean of the graduate school, we're not employees.
Right.
We may feel like we're employees. We may feel like we get a paycheck for the university and we perform a service, but we're not employees. We're apprentices. We're engaged in a learning position. There may be some money associated with that, but it's not an employee relationship. We're not under HR. So I would say that this kind of a survey should not go to graduate students. there is a graduate student survey. The data hasn't been crunched on it very well. They're talking about doing a better, more frequent survey and crunching the data more, but that it makes sense to keep that. Because the administrative units are separate, it makes sense to keep the survey separate.
Okay. And do you have a question?
Well, that was actually one of the questions. And then the other question was, I'm assuming that like HR has a copy.
This is all there, and actually,
we
forwarded the resolution to have one done, and they basically said, you know, they're giving us information, but we're not at this point getting anything more than anyone else at the university is getting, and we've asked for more involvement, and they've politely said, let us look at it first and be more involved. But they wanted this meeting that Mary had today, hopefully will kind of firm up a direction.
No.
Yeah, I can't recall. Remember, did Mary say a timeline for expected actionable items? I can't remember what she said.
So,
and then what the return was going to be to say after a year we did this, I mean, to the population. I can't remember what they did say.
They were looking at the levels they were at kind of early spring, so they're slightly ahead of the game on that, but that it will start from now kind of trickling down and hopefully in mid to late spring they'll really have kind of a here's all of our plan, but they're going to, the big thing that we've asked for is communication along the line. So once, now that they've got an outcome from this meeting, hopefully Mary will put our communication the action items that we're going to work on.
Quick question. As a music historian, I'm very interested in survey methodologies, and I imagine it's important in mind. Was there incentivization? Like, so there were people weren't entered into draws, or every fifth person wins a...
No, there wasn't. They were just, you kept getting an email until you did your survey, and then I believe if you didn't do your survey, they mailed you a paper survey.
Okay. Because that, I mean, 71% is insane.
Yeah.
with no incentive.
Yeah, and they had about 500 surveys that came back in on paper, which was huge. And even they had calls from people who said, I'm not comfortable filling it out online. They sent them a paper copy.
That is amazing, 70%. I mean, we the grad students did a survey, a GPSA survey. We did only a sample of students, not even all students. And we gave them incentives, and we only got to 65. It cost us $2,000 in incentives to get to 65%.
65 is pretty good.
It is pretty good. We were in the 30s, 40s until the incentives kicked in.
And when they broke it down, you know, across units, but there were some units that were reporting over 80%.
That's crazy. I mean, the survey methodology says that normal response rates for online surveys are in the 10 to 20%.
Were there any that were over 100%?
Only the Florida.
Only the Florida.
Okay, so there's about 3 minutes left. We can move on to D, but I don't know if we want to do a motion to extend the meeting. We have D and then an update from Ramsey and a briefing on the child care thing.
I would be comfortable postponing the ombudsman report until our next meeting. I imagine Ramsey would feel okay with 5 minutes or so.
Okay.
But
second.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor? All those opposed? Abstentions? motion passes with 11-0-2.
Brandon.
All right. So I'll try to be as best I can. I'll do a focus first on update on the site, and then last but not least, we'll just like highlighting key facts because you guys all have copies of the document. So in terms of the site, I finished the mock-ups and I've coded most of it, and unfortunately I came to the realization that that I wasn't able to address some of the issues that Ari brought up to me when we were discussing it, I think last semester or a semester a little bit ago, and that was number one, gaining mass. Like, how do you attract attention to this site if it's, you know, something completely new? How do you get students to come to it? And number two, retaining that mass, and more importantly, finding someone to keep that updated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I graduate, who's going to take my place in terms of updating the site? Are we going to appoint a position? Where is that money going to come from? How is that person going to get trained for that, et cetera? So the more I thought about it, the more it dawned on me on the fact of how, you know, I personally felt that the Cornell Village Summit would be actually a good medium through which the information could be transferred, because students read the Daily Sun on a daily basis, whether it's on Thursdays or whether it's on another day. People know about it, people go to the site, and I feel that it's like a great avenue. It's a win-win from both sides, because I spoke with them, I told them that like with more students coming to your site, you guys can get more money from your online advertising. Student government benefits because you know, we get more accountability. People are coming. People are more engaged with what's going on, and that's ultimately what we want. So I'm still working out the kinks with them to make sure things are okay. But in terms of what I was hoping or asking from your opinion was there were two issues that they were wondering about. So we were planning to largely just have it linked to the Cornell site as the immediate solution, and long term, as they start building a profile, we'll start expanding more. But permission was an issue in terms of can they take the pictures of the candidates from the Cornell site, number one. And number two was getting the information of the blurbs as well as the minutes. They weren't quite sure in terms of like the permissions associated with that. Can they do that? Can they not do that? And that was the main reason I wanted to bring to you guys. Should I write something more formal up, or, you know, what was your take on that?
Well, I suppose what I would say is that it's my understanding, and I may be wrong with this, that it's only the student assembly that posts pictures and blurbs online. All the other assemblies, I can't, never been to an EA meeting. You'll have to forgive me. But in the GPSA, of course, we take nominations from the floor, people speak if they want to, and then we conduct the election right there. So there's no campaign, there are no blurbs, there are no photos, there's none of that. So I guess that is a two-part thing. One is, you know, I think this is a great idea, get the information more out there, make people more involved, but understand that this, of course, is only a subset of student government. I would venture to say it's a subset wherein elections are actually competitive. Every single GPSA leadership position, there are 8 of us, 5 committee chairs and 3 executive board members. We were all unopposed. We appoint 2 members to the UA, both unopposed. I can't even fill the committee spots. So anyway, the response to your actual question is, I think the SA would have to give you permission to post their material and blurbs and photos.
Okay.
Even though they're running for UA positions, I think it would be the SA.
So I would recommend talking to Adam Reverett about putting that in the forms that people have to fill out.
Adam?
In order to Reverett.
I'm on the elections committee, but he's going to give me information. We have a meeting in 2 days.
In 2 days? Okay.
I think it should be, rather than a sort of holding people accountable, it should really be an information kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my campaign promise was, I will serve as GPSA president. I'm fulfilling that campaign promise. I didn't need to make a bigger campaign promise.
I will do the
job. No, which it will also, because it's going to have like the attachments, you know, those icons they usually have of like the word thing, like fix for the minute. So it's going to have something similar to that. But that's what's been going on. In terms of, do I have enough time?
Sure.
Okay. So in terms of teacher turnovers, current turnover for 2011 is 6.8% as compared to 48% in September 2010. That is a big jump. You know, clap of hands for them. And part of that is that I think it's a good move on HR. There are a number of factors that led to that, and that's between increases in living wages, benefits, training, and education programs. In terms of polls, since starting parent exit surveys, the rating of overall child experience went from 8% responding excellent to 56% responding excellent. A good increase as well, but I mean, the main thing that they're looking at is like they want to make sure that they have an excellent experience.
Yeah.
Those were the main ones that I remember seeing in bolding. That was it. So.
Mm-hmm.
86% of parents agreed they had seen positive change in the CCCC over the past 3 months. In terms of overall satisfaction measures, 97% of parents agree that their children have benefited from attending that place.
And I would add to Ramsey's point, Randy Wayne isn't here to defend himself, but in the UA exec, he said he had scanned this, and I think the members here know that this issue is near and dear to his heart. He's been very involved with the child care thing since the very beginning, and perhaps the biggest, most vocal person in this process on the committee. He was thrilled with this. He thought it was well done. He thought all the results were in the right direction, and he was thrilled.
The people involved will have a report also, because the person in my department has got it and said, yeah, it's looking way up.
Okay, so at this point, we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.